Our next case this morning is numbers 07-1807, the United States against Janice Claybrooks.
Good morning. May it please the court, Brian Fall on behalf of Janice Claybrooks. This court has held that a sentence within the properly ascertained guideline range cannot be treated as unreasonable by reference to 3553A6, which prohibits unwarranted sentencing disparities. Ms. Claybrooks argues an exception should be carved out of that rule for circumstances such as here, where multiple defendants are charged with similar conduct in a similar investigation within a single district. There were 20 defendants charged with Social Security fraud for double cashing checks in the Eastern District of Wisconsin. They were all arrested at the same time and brought in on similar charges. Prior to that, in the Eastern District, for example, we had voter fraud cases, and we now have some cases of copyright infringement, which all have the same motif. They were investigated at the same time and all brought in together.
Hasn't this court, though, held that when we are concerned about even-handedness of sentencing, we're not necessarily concerned about even-handedness in sentencing with respect to a small group of individuals charged with the same crime, same district, but more about the treatment of in a broader universe of individuals charged with that crime and who appear before different district judges?
Yes, you have, Your Honor. And I understand that holding, and I'm going to explain why I think this exception should be carved out here. There's a big difference in that in those cases where you're talking about disparities across the country, such as the fast-track disparity cases that came through about a year ago, that disparity is able to be addressed by the district court. It's able to be examined by the sentencing court. In these cases, oftentimes the disparity is not recognized until after all the sentencings are done. You notice there were some outliers, something that maybe isn't right, and the sentencing judge didn't have a chance to address that, the counsel there didn't have a chance to address that, and that defendant is kind of left out in the cold because that issue was not able to be presented because, for example, if she was the first one sentenced, she wouldn't know what happened before, or if she happened to be in the middle, you didn't know what happened afterwards, or whether this was an aberration or something along those lines. And as often is the case, offense levels and criminal history scores don't tell the whole picture. There are things specific to the individuals before the court that make them unique. And sometimes defendants with different scores or different levels are actually more similar in the level of culpability and their level of punishment that's justified than individuals who have the same criminal history score and the same the offense level. So to ensure that those similar people get a chance to be treated similarly, I think this court needs to carve out that exception that allows you to review cases in these limited situations where the issue was not able to be addressed by the district courts to determine whether or not something happened there, whether there was a disparity, and whether or not it's unwarranted. Unfortunately, because the record below couldn't be established, there's limited ability to do fact-finding or to examine the facts here and would need to be remanded to district courts to do that.
Well, in your brief, you mention the criminal history category of several of the defendants. That information usually isn't public. It's provided usually to this court only in documents under seal. How did you come by that information?
That actually was listed in the docket reports in sentencing minutes.
In the
sentencing minutes listed on the electronic case filing system. Generally, that information is put on the record in a sentencing when the judge does his guideline calculation. Occasionally, I believe, in most but maybe not all cases, the clerks will actually include the calculation in their sentencing minutes, which then gets filed in the clerk's office in the Eastern District of Wisconsin. That's all available electronically.
Interesting.
So to summarize, what I'm asking for is the exception to review this. And here, out of the approximately 20 defendants that were before this case, that were before the Eastern District judges in the Eastern District of Wisconsin, only two of them received prison time of the ones that have been sentenced. There are still, I think, a few people who have not been. The differences, although there are some between those defendants, aren't great. Ms. Claybrooks had a higher criminal history score than some of the other ones, but the amount of her fraud was considerably less than some. And so to view that, I think the district court needs to, the case should be remanded to the district court so it can address whether or not, in light of the other defendants who were sentenced in similar cases, it wishes to re-sentence Ms. Claybrooks or keep the sentence as it was. If you have no further questions, I'll save time for rebuttal.
Paul? We'll hear now from Mr. Froling for the government.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Rick Froling. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney in the Eastern District of Wisconsin, and I represent the government in this appeal. This court should affirm Ms. Claybrook's bottom of the guideline sentence as reasonable. The sentence is presumed reasonable, and Ms. Claybrooks has not presented anything that would overcome that presumption in this case. We're primarily content to rely on our written submission to the court, just addressing a couple points that Mr. Fall raised this morning. We'd ask the court not to carve out an exception to Boscarino. As Judge Ripple pointed out, that would be inconsistent with the policy expressed, for example, in the Newsom case, that it's not enough to point or not concerned with a small group of defendants in a particular district or in a particular circuit, but actually national uniformity is the goal of 3553A6. Mr. Fall had mentioned that sometimes criminal records don't tell the whole picture. We'd simply point out there is no suggestion here that any of the other defendants, if the court even reaches the issue, any of the other defendants had the same combination of total offense level and criminal history category, and of course differences based on properly calculated guidelines that just happen to be different are not unwarranted. Finally, with respect to the criminal history information Your Honor mentioned, there was no specific mention of defendant names, but in the district court's order denying Ms. Claybrook's request for release pending appeal, there was some discussion of criminal history categories. It said certain number of defendants had a criminal history category of one, that sort of thing, but did not address those defendants by name.
But it is that information is available with name in its public information?
I'm not sure it may be, as Mr. Fall mentioned, that it could be reflected in the public record depending on what occurred at a particular sentencing. But I'm just not aware of that. Unless the court has further questions, thank you for your time. We'd ask that the sentence be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Froling. You have 4 minutes, Mr. Fall.
Unless you understand any further questions, I have nothing for the
Apparently not. Thank you.
Okay. Now,